Okay, well, let's just pray. Father, thank you for the time you've spent here this morning already. We love being in your presence. We love to worship you. We love to know your spirit around us and within us. And I just pray this morning, Father, that you would speak to each one of us. You would tell us whatever it is we need to hear today, Lord. Would you give us ears to listen? Would you give us hearts and minds that are open to receive from you? In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. Okay. So I want to talk today about one of the disciples of Jesus, quite a well-known disciple, although not very much is said about him. And this disciple's name is Thomas, right? So we've all heard of Thomas the disciple, okay? So what, if you were to give one word to describe Thomas, what would it be?
Doubting,
okay. And it's interesting because quite a few of the disciples have kind of like nicknames or descriptive words. So if I was to say Judas, what's he known as? Whoa, traitor, betrayer. Again, not a word you want. What about Peter?
Rock.
But Peter was also the denier, remember that? So he was known as that as well. And what about John? The one who Jesus loved, right? So it's interesting how we know these characters in the Bible, and we have a kind of descriptor, if you like, of them, which can be like one word or a nickname or a phrase. And nicknames are strange things. I didn't really have a nickname at school because I had a surname that could be easily manipulated. So my name's McNinch. So I had my nickname at school was just like Ninchy, which is like no thought put in it at all. But I remember a guy coming to our schools at primary school, about P5 or 6, new guy came to school, and he was introduced in front of the class. And when he came up in front of the class, he got really embarrassed, and his face went all red. And his nickname for the length of time that I knew him through school was Beamer. So he got a nickname Beamer because of that one moment. And I love when names come out just of like, you know, situations that and they stick. But sometimes, though, we have to be careful with names. Sometimes nicknames aren't good. Sometimes the descriptor that we put in people isn't good. And I think Thomas is one of those guys. I want to look at Thomas, all too often known as Doubting Thomas, and see if this name really fits his character. And maybe as we're looking at this morning, maybe you could be thinking about some of the things that people have called you, or that you maybe have called yourself, and think, does that moniker, does that description of yourself actually fit who you are? And more importantly, does it fit who God sees you are as? Does God see you as that name? I want to see if this doubting aspect of Thomas is really negative, or maybe there's some positivity in it. Maybe there's a positive trait about this name. When we hear the name Doubting Thomas, like, it makes me kind of think, was Tommy some... Tommy? Thomas? Me and Tommy, we've been hanging out, you know. Yeah, Tommy and Andy, we're a gang. But someday, when I think about Thomas being like a doubter, it gives it a kind of thought that he might have been like kind of flaky in his faith. He's a bit wishy-washy, a bit unstable. Maybe he wasn't really as devoted to Jesus as maybe the rest of the disciples. Was he someone who talked a good game, but when it came to the crunch, he would just crumble and question in the face of any challenge? Maybe that's why he's known as Doubting Thomas. But maybe he's called Doubting Thomas because there's an alternate description for him. Maybe he's someone who had an inquiring mind that needed to see the truth to believe it. Maybe he had questions that he wanted answers to. I actually believe that Thomas's doubt had a purpose, because I think that Thomas, at the heart of it, Thomas wanted to know the truth about Jesus. He wanted to know the truth. And I see his doubt as evidence of faith, not as evidence of a lack of faith. I think his doubt is evidence of a desire to have his faith founded in reality, and to some degree to be founded in fact. And you know, faith is not opposed to fact. Yeah? We know that, right? You know, faith is not opposed to fact. And it's good to ask questions. It's good to ask questions. I think I kind of have a, I don't know what I'd call it, but I have this thing I live by, that every question is valid. Every question is valid. No question is off limits. Because if we make questions off limits, then we actually, what we do is we stifle discussion and discourse, debate and knowledge. Because all knowledge is gleaned through questions, right? Right? A question has to be asked if you want to find an answer. If you don't ask the question, someone's asked that question and there's an answer for it. And it's important that questions are being asked. So that's what I'm going to suggest, that Thomas said doubt is actually someone who was, this is a descriptor of someone who was inquisitive, was intrigued by Jesus, but at his heart wanted to know everything about Jesus so that it would strengthen his faith, not to undermine his faith, yeah? So Thomas, this is what I said, everybody knows about Thomas because he's known as Thomas the Doubter or Doubting Thomas, but he's only actually mentioned three times in the Gospels. Well, four, if you include where the list of 12 disciples are listed, right? So he's in that list, obviously. But other than that, he's only mentioned three times, and they're all in the Gospel of John. And this is the only Gospel that makes any mention of him other than the list of the names of disciples. And the first mention we get of Thomas is found in John 11 and 16. So as our regular way of doing things, we're going to read a few verses before so we can see the context of why his name is mentioned. So we're going to go to John 11, verse 1. We'll read the first 16 verses. A man named Lazarus was sick. He lived in Bethany with his sisters Mary and Martha. This is Mary who later poured the expensive perfume at the Lord's feet and wiped them with her hair. I love things like that where, just so we're not confused, this is the Mary we're talking about. Like, I like that because there's a lot of Marys, yeah? There's a lot of Marys in the Bible. I love these wee things just make me, I don't know, enjoy that, seeing these wee asides. By the way, it's this Mary we're talking about. So we know who it is. Her brother Lazarus was sick. So the two sisters sent a message to Jesus telling him, Lord, your dear friend is very sick. But when Jesus heard about it, he said, Lazarus' sickness will not end in death. No, it happened for the glory of God, so that the Son of God will receive glory from this. So although Jesus loved Martha, Mary, and Lazarus, he stayed where he was for the next 2 days. Finally, he said to his disciples, let's go back to Judea. But his disciples objected. Rabbi, they said, only a few days ago, the people in Judea were trying to stone you. Are you going there again? And Jesus replied, there are 12 hours of daylight every day. During the day, people can walk safely. They can see because they have the light of this world. But at night, there is a danger of stumbling because they have no light. Then he said, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but now I will go and wake him up. The disciples said, Lord, if he's sleeping, he will soon get better. Here's my side. I reckon the disciples were saying this because they didn't want to go back to Judea. They're saying, if he's sleeping, just let him sleep. Nothing to do here. If we go back to Judea, they're going to start throwing stones again, and we're going to get hurt, maybe even killed. Lord, if he's sleeping, he will soon get better. They thought Jesus meant Lazarus was simply sleeping, but Jesus meant Lazarus had died. So he told them plainly, Lazarus is dead. And for your sakes, I'm glad I wasn't there, for now you will really believe. Come, let's go see him. Thomas, nicknamed the twin, said to his fellow disciples, let's go too and die with Jesus. The last few times that Jesus had been in Judea, the Jews had tried to seize him and kill him. So there was good reason why the disciples were not eager to go back there, even to see Lazarus in his final days or to pay respects to him. However, Thomas, he knew, he'd picked up on the fact through what Jesus was saying, that Jesus was going to go back there no matter what the disciples thought and no matter what the dangers were. And here's Thomas, who became known as Doubting Thomas, making a very brave statement, and that he had assumed that if he went to Jesus, it could very well mean the end of his life. Here's a guy who was willing to follow Jesus even to death, Thomas was willing to follow Jesus even if it meant his own death. And what Thomas was doing here was he's putting into action what Jesus had taught the disciples in Mark 8. We see this in verse 34 of Mark 8. This is Jesus talking. Then calling the crowd to join his disciples, Jesus said, if any of you wants to be my follower, you must give up your own way, take up your cross, and follow me. If you try to hang on to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake and for the sake of the good news, you will save it. I'm really convinced that Thomas has heard this. It's gone deep in. He believes it, and he's following the teachings of Jesus right there. In this moment, Thomas was the one and only disciple who was putting into action this teaching that Jesus had given them, and he was willing to follow his master even if it meant death. He truly wanted to do the will of God, and if this meant death, then he was still willing to take it. Now, that doesn't fall in line with the personality of a doubter, right? Doesn't sound like a doubter, but rather it sounds like someone who has honest questions, but once he receives the answers, he's willing to go all the way. He's willing to follow Jesus even to the end of his life. Thomas, along with all the other disciples, could only see disaster if they went with Jesus back to Judea, but he was going anyway. We hear that. He knew what the likely outcome was in going back to Judea, and it wasn't good. But Thomas had decided he was going anyway. Thomas was determined to be faithful to Jesus, even in the face of death. So for Thomas, this is my summary, there may have been death at the end of this journey, but there would never be disloyalty. He might have faced death, but he would never face disloyalty. And to me, that is not the character of a doubter. Yeah? Okay, that's the first mention. Second mention that we find of Thomas is in John 14. So again, for context, we'll go back a few verses. So John 14, verse 1. Again, this is well-known words from John 14. Don't let your hearts be troubled. Trust in God and trust also in me. Sorry, context. Jesus is talking to his disciples here. This is who he's addressing. Don't let your hearts be troubled. Trust in God and also trust in me. There is more than enough room in my Father's home. If this were not so, would I have told you that I am going to prepare a place for you? When everything is ready, I will come and get you so that you will always be with me where I am. And you know the way to where I am going. No, we don't know, Lord, Thomas said. We have no idea where you're going, so how can we know the way? And Jesus told him, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one can come to the Father except through me. This second mention of Thomas is him asking a question. So in the same way that Thomas was the only one that was going to break cover from the other disciples to say, let's go to Judea, even if it means getting killed, I think that the other disciples were also sitting there thinking, what is Jesus talking about? He's saying, like, you know where I'm going, but we don't. But Thomas is a guy who speaks out, puts his hand up, says, excuse me, Jesus, you're saying you know, we know where you're going, but we don't know. So can you tell us? So I love the fact that he's the guy that steps up and asks the question that everybody else wants to ask. I love that also that his question that he asked Jesus brings out one of the greatest I am statements of Jesus. I am the way, the truth, and the life. Jesus said that because Thomas asked him a question. I mean, that's up there with John 3 and 16, right? That's like everybody knows that I am the way, the truth, and the life. Jesus said that in answer to Thomas's question. One of the most well-known, most quoted statements from the Bible, and it stems out of a question that doubting Thomas asked. One way, I guess, you could look at Thomas's question, which is, you could say, well, he's not got much faith if he's questioning everything that Jesus says. Why can't he just accept the words of Jesus and move on? But maybe Thomas was someone who was eager to know and understand what Jesus was saying. Maybe he was eager to know that if Jesus was going to go away, he wanted to know where he was going so he could go with him. See, we've got evidence of that from the previous mention. And I love the fact that he was honest and even passionate in his question. Jesus made a statement, "You know the way to where I'm going." And Thomas says, "No, we don't. No, we don't. Where are you going?" "I don't know the way, but I want to follow you, so you have to tell me how." So not only was Thomas so passionate about going with Jesus in that first story we read and sticking with his Lord, but he also sought out a deeper truth and asked a question that brings out a reply from Jesus that is at the very heart of what faith is. That we believe he is the way, the truth, and the life, and it's only through Jesus that we have access to Father God. Yeah? Isn't that great? Like, that's Thomas's question that drew that truth out of Jesus. So, are you with me, yeah? Are we good? I'm on a train of thought here, so I'm going to plow on, right? So these two mentions of Thomas in Scripture are not where Doubting Thomas gets his name, right? So we could have had Brave Thomas or Courageous Thomas. We could have Questioning Thomas. But there's no really any kind of notion there of him being doubting. There's nothing negative that we see there, really. So let's look at the mention of Thomas where he does get the doubter label. But let's read it in light of what we now know about Thomas from those first two mentions, okay? So John 20, we're in verse 24. One of the 12 disciples, Thomas, nicknamed the twin. So that's twice he's been identified as that. So we know that about him. Thomas was not with the others when Jesus came. So this is the resurrected Jesus. Jesus had appeared. Let me read this. I'll come back to that. Right. So Thomas was not with the other disciples when Jesus came. This is after Jesus resurrected. They told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he replied, "I won't believe it unless I see the nail wounds in his hands, put my fingers into them, and place my hand into the wound in his side." We move on 8 days. 8 days later, the disciples were together again, and this time Thomas was with them. The doors were locked, but suddenly, as before, Jesus was standing among them. "Peace be with you," he said. Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here and look at my hands. Put your hand into the wound in my side. Don't be faithless any longer. Believe." "My Lord and my God," Thomas exclaimed. Then Jesus told him, "You believe because you've seen me. Blessed are those who believe without seeing me." So when you read this, it is easy to see how Thomas gets the name Doubting Thomas. Because Jesus actually says to him, "Thomas, stop doubting and believe." So it's easy to say that Thomas was a doubter because even Jesus said it. However, we need to look at the whole story. Mary Magdalene was the first to see Jesus after he was risen from the dead, and then she told the disciples. Now, we don't really know what the disciples' full response was to Mary's story, but I'm thinking that maybe it was similar to what Thomas's was when he was told, because even though Jesus told disciples he would rise from the dead, it's still an unbelievable story, right? So I don't know, I'm just kind of expanding that out for my own benefit, but maybe the other disciples weren't as clued in. They were pretty wise after the event, that's what I'm trying to say. Maybe they weren't so much, but Mary Magdalene was the first to see Jesus. She told the disciples, and when we see the first appearance of Jesus to the disciples, they were locked in an upper room in fear of their lives. So they're not in a good place. There's a lot of doubt and fear in the other disciples in that moment. But Thomas wasn't with them. And when they told him, he said, "Okay, if this is true, I need to see it for myself." So absolutely, there was doubt in his mind, But the doubt was there because he needed to see what they had seen. I'm not convinced that Thomas had lost his faith. I think for Thomas that he just didn't want to accept like second-hand information. I think he said, if you've experienced this, if you've seen this, I want to see it for myself. I don't think this is Thomas giving up on Jesus. See, Thomas, I think just from what we've learned from him, from those other two passages, Thomas is someone whose faith was clearly founded on a relationship with Jesus, but he's also with someone whose faith was founded in fact. His faith was founded in learning and understanding and questioning and discovery. Thomas needed a faith founded on what he himself had discovered, not just what someone else had told him. He wasn't going to take anyone's word for it. He had to see it for himself. We can view that in two ways. We can view it and say, well, maybe he should have been a bit more faithful, listened to his friends and accepted it, and that would be great. But this is a human being, and how many of us really take everything that we hear at face value? We want to see the evidence, right? We want to see things for ourselves. And I think we can see that Thomas's faith hadn't really bottomed out and collapsed because of his reaction to the risen Christ, because he profoundly addresses him as God. So Thomas's immediate response when seeing the pierced hands and the wounded side of Jesus, he says, "My Lord and my God." And just like Jesus, he draws out of Jesus that amazing statement of, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." Jesus draws out of Thomas the truth that Jesus is God. Fantastic, fantastic. This is a powerful truth that comes out of Thomas here. This is something that we know and can maybe take for granted because of all our back knowledge and our history and our teaching and our learning. For a Jew, but also for one of these disciples, to actually declare Jesus as God was a massive step forward and a huge statement to make. He knew that when he saw the risen Lord, that he truly was encountering God. And I don't think he would ever forget that. And I don't think he would have had that experience if he just accepted what his friends had told him. So what do we know then about Thomas? Thomas was willing to follow Jesus to his death. I think that's someone to be admired. That's someone to look to. That's someone whose example that I want to learn about and maybe replicate. And you know what? After the resurrection, where his well-known story of being a doubter all happened, after the resurrection of Jesus, he was commissioned along with all the other disciples to go into all the world to preach the good news of Jesus. He's still part of that troop. He becomes an apostle. He's on that journey, that calling that Jesus had commissioned his disciples to do. When he went into all the world to preach the good news of Jesus, he did exactly that. And he was, as far as we know, as far as any records that we have know, he was the only disciple to take the gospel beyond the Roman Empire. So there's historical records that show that Thomas went further, or he certainly went out the borders of the Roman Empire with the gospel. There are some records that suggest that Thomas may have been speared to death on one of his visits to India to spread the gospel and plant churches there. Okay, that's not a secure fact, by the way, but there are records where that's suggested. And if that is the case, even if it isn't, Thomas was remarkable for his commitment and selfless devotion to Jesus. And I know that at times we can all identify with Thomas, with doubting Thomas, right? We all have those moments. We all have those moments. We have doubts when things aren't going our way, when life, you know, we've had a bad deal. You know, the cards haven't fallen for us, all that stuff. Things just are not happening the way we want. Life's not smooth, and the doubts come in. We start to doubt our faith. We start to doubt the validity or of moving forward with Jesus. Why should I follow this God if my life keeps collapsing around me? Yeah? Is that just me, or are we there? We have these things come into our heads. It's a reality, right? It's okay to admit that, because it's okay to doubt as long as our doubts become questions that we're asking Jesus. Where did I go there? Yeah, we can all identify with Thomas. We all have doubts. We want to know things for ourselves. Sometimes as well, no one else's word is good enough and no one else's experience is enough to convince us. You know, it's how many times have we sat and been at a conference and we hear amazing stories of what's happening in some other city or some other country, and that's great. That doesn't overly excite me sometimes. Quite a lot of time it doesn't, because it's like, I want to see that here. That stuff doesn't convince me until it happens to me or happens in Falkirk. That's what I want to see. It's great, we can celebrate and rejoice, but I'll be honest, when I hear those stories that are happening and they're not here, I also feel a bit sad. Is that okay? I feel a bit sad, because that's reality. Not because I'm not happy for the blessing that's happening elsewhere, but I would say, God, what about here? What about Falkirk? What about my people? What about this church? Yeah, it's okay. Sometimes other people's experience, other people's stories aren't enough. We need to know for ourselves. So let me ask you a question. What faith is greater? The one that, the faith that never doubts, or the faith that doubts and investigates and believes? I don't know. We can have a foot in both of those camps, because there's things that we just believe. Guys, I've never seen a virgin birth, but I believe there was one. I believe there was one, because if I don't believe that, everything else that I've seen Jesus do doesn't make sense. In fact, invalidates his existence, as far as I'm concerned. I don't need someone to prove to me that that can happen. I believe it's happened. That's a kind of blind faith thing. But for many other things, there's doubts and questions, so that we can get to an understanding to believe what we believe. And today, we're living in a world, in our Western world, we're living under the shadow of ideologies. Did you know that? We are shadowed by ideologies that are based on feelings and self-perception as opposed to fact. And when these ideologues are questioned or held to account, the questioner is accused of being a something-ist or a phobic or ultimately cancelled. And you know, the gospel of Jesus has no place in that kind of ideology. The gospel of Jesus is a place where people can question, where people can search for truth, can make mistakes, can debate, can get things wrong if it's in pursuit of a closer walk with Jesus. It's okay. It's okay to question. It's okay to doubt. It's okay to not know. But it's also okay to find out what's true. Listen, facts are good. Questions are good. Investigation and study and discovery are good. And we should never shut this down. And I can see that in our world just now, there is an ideology going about that's shutting down speech, shutting down opposing view or opinion. And the church cannot be that place. The church has to be a place we have a platform for conversation. No matter how difficult it is, no matter how much we may disagree. But here's the thing. Sometimes you can disagree with something, and through debate and discussion and conversation and investigation and discovery, you can change your mind. And maybe that changing of the mind, just like Thomas, can cause you to declare, my Lord and my God. You see, this stuff where we question and go into a culture of discovery and learning draws us to a place of worship. because we learn more about Jesus and we declare who he is. We should never shut down space for conversation. When we have doubts or when we hear about doubting Thomas, let's remember that he was much more than a doubter, but rather he was someone who needed to find things out for himself. He needed to search for the truth. He needed to believe not because of other people's words, but because of God himself revealing it to him. We can trust what other people say, but we can also search. Yeah? It's both and. We can trust what other people say, but we can also search. So I guess my encouragement today is like be like Thomas and his dedication to Christ. Be like Thomas and his dedication to follow Jesus even to death. Let's be like Thomas and his desire to really know for himself who this risen Jesus is. Let us be like Thomas and search with both our hearts and with our unseen faith and with our minds to discover the risen Lord. You know, faith isn't a brain bypass. Faith isn't a brain bypass. We spoke a few weeks ago about the two pillars that we want to build our church on, to love the Lord our God, to love others. But what does that first pillar say? To love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your strength, and all your... Okay. Faith does not bypass the brain. Faith does not bypass your mind. Faith does not bypass your intellect. It's all in. It's all in. And we're all learning. We're all learning. And when Jesus comes back and his kingdom's restored, we're all going to have 1,000 questions for him, aren't we? And I can't wait. I've got loads of stuff to ask him. Loads of stuff. Because there's so much I don't understand. So much I don't understand. And you know, and when God created the world and he created Adam and Eve, he created humankind, he created them to learn. He created them to discover. He created them to explore. He created them to build and create and to co-create with him. We're not automatons who just receive information and regurgitate it back out. We're living human beings created by God who have questions and doubts. And it's okay. It's okay. So let's ask the questions that we need to be asked. Let's have the conversations that we need to have. And let's learn together. Let's learn together about who this risen Jesus really is. And I believe that in that, like, we will see him do marvelous things. Think about what the apostles went on to see and do. After that, trembling with fear in an upper room, running scared because they thought they were going to die. And Jesus comes back, reveals his risen self to them, and they changed the world. We're sitting here today because they changed the world. That's what our God can do. That's what we're a part of. That's what this exploration and journey of faith is all about. And then when we do that, that's an attractive thing for people to come into. Yeah?